You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our passage today is at the end of what are called the Beatitudes, some pretty lofty and poetic talk from Jesus about us being the salt of the earth and not hiding our light under a bushel. But then he gets right down to specifics. No more generalities. He starts to meddle. Jesus demands that his followers should not only follow the law, but do so even more strictly than the Pharisees. No murder? If you even get mad at your brother or sister, it may as well be murder. No adultery? If you even look at another person with lust, it may as well be adultery. So, as part of Jesus' tirade, today's passage comes along with a similar pattern. Worship? As long as you have unfinished business with someone, you might as well forget it. You can't truly work things out with God.
Our words of wisdom are from Matthew, chapter 5, verses 23 through 26, the Message version. This is how I want you to conduct yourself in these matters. If you enter your place of worship and, about to make an offering, you suddenly remember a grudge a friend has against you, abandon your offering. Leave immediately, go to this friend and make things right. Then, and only then, come back and work things out with God.
Or say you're out on the street and an old enemy accosts you. Don't lose a minute. Make the first move. Make things right with him. After all, if you leave the first move to him, knowing his track record, you're likely to end up in court, maybe even jail. If that happens, you won't get out without a stiff fine. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Once upon a time, an African boy was listening carefully as the missionary teacher explained why it is that Christians give gifts to each other on Christmas Day. She said, "Gifts are an expression of our joy over Jesus' birth and our friendship with each other." When the next Christmas Day came, that same boy brought the teacher a beautiful, beautiful seashell. "Where did you get such a gorgeous shell?" the teacher asked. She gently examined how lustrous it was, the shape, the color and the markings. The boy told her that there was only one spot where such extraordinary shells could be found. When he named the beach, a bay many miles away, the teacher was speechless. She said, It's exquisite, but you shouldn't have walked that long distance to get a gift for me." The boy's eyes brightened, and he answered, "Long walk. Part of gift." It's that time of year, and gift-giving anxiety is all around us. What to get, where to get it, by when? Are the December 26 sales too late? So much of what we give and receive is necessarily tangible, stuff we can wrap and hold in our hands, yet the gifts that so often mean the most are the ones that we can't see, we can't touch or hold. They're the gifts like that long walk, things like hope, patience, and our gift for today, reconciliation. The Greek word for reconciliation literally means restoration, to overcome distrust or animosity, to restore balance and harmony. Up until recently, the only reconciliation most of us ever did was with our checkbooks, and now I let an app do that for me. If you're familiar with the origin of the phrase, bury the hatchet, you'll know that that comes from a tradition of Native American chiefs making peace with one another by symbolically burying a weapon of war. In addition to our own Methodist sacraments of communion and baptism, the Roman Catholic tradition has five additional sacraments, and one of them is reconciliation. Whatever the means, reconciliation is about restoring relationships and making peace where there is otherwise tension. And Jesus doesn't mince words on the subject. He basically turns every single one of us into a hypocrite with our passage for today. If you're coming to church and you have a grudge against someone, anyone, drop what you're doing and go and make it right with that person. Because our relationship with the divine is directly affected by our relationship with others. The work of the Spirit can't be completed in us until we've made the effort to be reconciled with those from whom we're separated. Now, if you're familiar with the process of AA or NA or any of the 12-step groups, you know that reconciliation is a huge aspect of one's healing and ongoing sobriety. In fact, reconciliation is the focus of 2 out of the 12 steps. Make a list of all the persons you've harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. And make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Sound familiar? If you suddenly remember a grudge a friend has against you, abandon your offering, leave immediately, go to this friend and make things right. Then, and only then, come back and work things out with God. But props to the 12-step program for recognizing that this reconciliation isn't something that comes naturally. There's a reason these 2 steps in the 12 steps are number 8 and number 9. More than half the steps are the process of recognizing you have a problem and working up the courage to make amends or work things out with people. Look, our lives are full of broken, cracked, and tarnished relationships. Some are unmendable, and in the case of physical or emotional abuse, should rightfully be abandoned. But with so many other relationships, we spend a lot of time thinking about how things could have been different and what conditions would be necessary to make things right. But most of the time, we end up just letting things be. It's a lot easier that way. The course of least resistance, woohoo! But still, it just doesn't feel right. It feels incomplete. With our current political climate of mistrust and grievance and outrage, it's almost hard to remember how, after 9/11, lots of folks were flying the American flag or putting flag bumper stickers on their cars, all in the spirit of "United we stand." Granted, for most folks, the sentiment was pretty superficial. But there was a glimmer of seeing what setting aside petty differences for a common goal could actually look like. Now, I'll admit, I'm an idealist. I'd like to think that when we look at our fellow citizens and see different ethnic backgrounds, different faiths, different beliefs, and different values, we can at least say we're all Americans. But when you get right down to it, a lot of Americans don't agree with that. I knew we were in trouble in those weeks immediately following 9/11. A Lutheran pastor was defrocked and fired for praying at an interfaith September 11th memorial service. By whom? His fellow Lutherans. Why? Because a very insular Lutheran sect believed that his participation lent credibility to idol worshipers and pagans, which translated as Catholics and Muslims. That was one of the singular events that galvanized my commitment to interfaith dialogue and understanding, despite the threat it poses to some people's narrow belief system. And ironically, it's essentially led to deep and genuine friendships with people from many non-Christian traditions on one hand, and On the other hand, further alienation from those committed to, call it, Christian exceptionalism. It's not getting better. The recent rise of Christian nationalism among evangelicals is just one more indicator of the growing divisiveness within Christianity and the country as a whole. So, what are we to do? It's easy to say that we're one, but it's hard work to actually get along with one another, especially when one's values are diametrically opposed to someone else's. And I know, forget the pie-in-the-sky dreams of interfaith or even ecumenical understanding. Where does getting along with one another get especially hard? With those who are closest to us. In 1 John 4, the author makes it pretty clear. If anyone boasts, "I love God," and goes right on hating their brother or sister, thinking nothing of it, they're a liar. If they won't love the person they can see, how can they love the God they can't see? The command we have from Christ is blunt. Loving God includes loving people. You've got to love both. Well, that's just great. We're not only hypocrites, but liars too. Yep, I'm afraid that's what we humans are. But that doesn't stop us from longing for what sometimes seems unattainable. Genuine reconciliation. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. You can feel it. When we come together in person or online, we try to bring our whole selves. And our whole selves are a product of our relationships and our experiences. So when we have unresolved issues in our lives, it's like we're not actually bringing our whole selves. Like the passages say, we may as well put down our offering and go straighten things out, because we can't be fully and authentically present to the divine, which we can't see, while we have unfinished business with a brother or sister we can see. We have to overcome our hypocrisy, our natural inclination towards opting for conflict avoidance and for being okay with not understanding one another. A healthy dose of grace doesn't hurt either. Alvin Straight was a no-nonsense man who was never one to lean on others. Diabetes had compromised his eyesight and his driver's license was revoked. The only way he could walk was with the help of two canes. One day he got word that his brother Lyle, who he hasn't spoken to in 10 years, suffered a stroke. It's then Alvin decides he has to make amends. "My brother and I said some unforgivable things the last time we met, but I'm trying to put that behind me, and this trip is a hard swallow of my pride. I just hope I'm not too late. With little money, but plenty of patience and tenacity, 73-year-old Alvin climbs aboard his 1966 John Deere lawnmower and at 5 miles per hour, trailer attached, creeps the 260 miles from his small Iowa town to Lyle's home in Wisconsin. After 6 weeks on the road, at almost break-nothing speed, Alvin arrives.
Lyle? Lyle? Alvin? Did you ride that thing all the way out here to see me?
I did, Lyle.
You know, we can look to the heavens all we want this Christmas, looking for starry signs over Bethlehem and looking for that peace that eludes us. But whether it be between nations, or with our across-the-street neighbor, or with our son, or our daughter, or brother, or sister, or parent, the magic of the season just ain't gonna do it. The fact of the matter is, we won't even catch a glimpse of what we're longing for until we're sitting on the front porch with a brother or sister from whom we've been alienated. Be it in Africa, the Middle East, Washington, D.C., in our own lives, or on a riding lawnmower, achieving any kind of genuine reconciliation means commitment to a long trip. Christmas itself is essentially the beginning of a long trip for Jesus, whose whole life embodies the idea that the long trip is part of the gift. And come on, you know the one for whom you need to make a long trip. You've been thinking about that person this whole message. We know that we can't be fully present to the divine without at least making the effort of making things right. Despite the obstacles, we long for reconciliation. And rest assured, the longer the journey, the sweeter the reconciliation. We can be reconciled with those from whom we're separated. And our word from Jesus today is that we must be reconciled with those from whom we're separated. So, regardless of how long it takes, regardless of the distance, the reconciliation we long for is worth the effort. For many of us, reconciliation would be the best gift imaginable, worth both the giving and receiving. So blessings on your long walk, and keep longing.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information, or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.